Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. It is great to be here. Thank you for all that enthusiasm. I really do appreciate it very much. I want to thank Carol Moseley Braun for her kind words and her friendship, and I want to thank her for doing a great job for the people of Illinois and the people of our country. Thank you, Carol. And I want to thank Senator Dick Durbin for also doing a spectacular job for this nation and for the people of this state. I want to thank Congressman Tom Ewing for coming here with us and being a very gracious host. Thank you, Congressman. Congressman Ron Kine from Wisconsin is here with the President today. And I want to thank Chancellor Michael Akin and President James Stuckel. And ladies and gentlemen, I want to ask you to join me in expressing thanks to a man who I think without question has been the best Secretary of Education our country's ever had, Dick Riley. Would you stand up, Secretary Riley? We appreciate you. I want to thank Mayor Dan McCollum of Champaign and Mayor Todd Satterthwaite of Urbana and all the other distinguished guests who are here. And on behalf of the President, I want to thank the groups that provided music, the members of the Black Chorus, the Girls Next Door and the Other Guys, the University of Illinois Pep Band, and Tony Clements. Thank you, Tony. I was listening as Dick Durbin did that experiment with the sound system of the ILL. See, I'm not from here, so I didn't know if that I'm liable to say something like, you know, Oski Wawa. Well, what does that mean again? Anyway, thank you very much. I'm really excited to be back here on this campus. As Dick said, I've been here many times. I've got a lot of friends on this campus, and back when I was in the House of Representatives and then in the United States Senate, I worked for 20 years to create what we now call the Information Superhighway. And I'm telling you, this is really the central clover leaf for the Information Superhighway right here on this campus. And I don't think we'll have time to go to the Beckman Institute and play their computer in air hockey today, but I did get a chance to see Larry Smarr and some other friends who do such a great job on this campus. And there are people from other parts of the nation here who don't really realize necessarily, because they might not have been here before, that anybody who surfs the net and goes to a homepage on the World Wide Web owes a debt of gratitude to this university and this campus for the creation of Mosaic that made the World Wide Web accessible all around the country. When we took office 5 years ago, it's hard to believe this, but there were only 50 sites, 50 web pages on the World Wide Web, only 50. And now there are, of course, tens of millions, hundreds of millions. It is absolutely incredible. But this university made that possible. And that's in the tradition of Shambana. Y'all don't mind me saying that, do you? And the first transistor was created here, and incidentally, a half century ago. And this year, more than a half a billion transistors are created every second in the world. So from the World Wide Web to the transistor to so many other things, this campus has helped to create the future. And you know as much as any group of people in the world that our future depends upon our willingness to invest in education. Less than a year ago, I was here on this campus again, and I was introduced by Laura Appenzeller, your student body president, and I conducted a town hall meeting on education and the new proposals that President Clinton had put before the Congress at that time to expand access to education. And we helped to build the case right here on this campus, and with the help of these three federal legislators who are with us, we were able to expand the Pell Grants and create the Hope Scholarships and set standards and have a whole new revolution in education. How many people here have personally benefited from expanded Pell Grants and student loans and interest deductions for student loans? Well, that is what we must depend upon for the future. And ladies and gentlemen, the agenda that has made this investment in the future possible has been put before our country by President Clinton. And last night, he stood before the American people and told us what we all know to be true. The state of our union is strong, and he laid out a plan to make it stronger still. We're going to stand by him and support him and help him to enact that agenda for the good of our country. The 21st century can be the most prosperous and productive time in all of human history if we share President Clinton's vision and follow his leadership and help to put this agenda into action. But in mapping out the plans for enacting these proposals that he presented to the country last night, let's don't forget for 1 minute what it was like more than 5 years ago when we came to this state and talked about the need for change. The future back then didn't look so rosy. Don't ever forget the fact that when we took office, there was a budget deficit of $300 billion, the highest in history. It was projected that year to be $357 billion, higher still. It was projected in the following years to go out higher than $500 billion a year, and people were beginning to lose hope. Unemployment was up and job creation was down. Crime and welfare were both up, and investment in education and opportunity were both down. The hunger for change was up, but hope for the future was down. I used to say back then everything that should be up was down, and everything that should have been down was up. And we needed change in America, and thanks to you, we have had a chance over these last 5 years to put this agenda for change before the people. And I'm telling you, President Clinton has brought change for the better in America. He has improved the prospects for the people of our country. Despite all of the problems and challenges that he inherited, he did not look for scapegoats. He looked for solutions. He moved us beyond the false choices and toward the future. He said, let's stop arguing about the left and the right and move forward toward a better day for our country. He said, we can eliminate the deficit and at the same time invest in our people in our country. And that's what we've done under President Clinton's leadership. He said that we need to move past the old argument, as he said last night, about whether the government is the problem or the solution, because there is a new way, his way, which is to cut down the size of the government, but invest more in education and environment and health care and job training and technology and the future of this country. And that's what we've been doing. And now we have got the first balanced budget presented to the Congress in more than 30 years. And at the same time, he has presented the largest new investments in education in more than a generation. And we've seen the creation of almost 15 million new jobs in America. Good jobs with higher wages. More Americans own their own private homes now than ever before in the entire history of the United States of America. We're seeing the income gap close up. African-American poverty, for example, is at the lowest level in the history of the United States of America. That's progress. Our cities are coming back. Our environment is cleaner. Our communities and families are stronger. We've got welfare down by almost 4 million people, the biggest drop in welfare in the history of the United States of America. I'm telling you, we're moving in the right direction. Our air is cleaner. Our water is cleaner. We're cleaning up the toxic waste sites. So today, let's remember the contrast between what we have seen happening for the good in our nation these last 5 years compared to what was going on before we got here, because the country was then moving in the wrong direction. They had driven the economy into the ditch. The problems were not being solved. So the agenda that this president has been pursuing and presented again last night is good for this nation. And today, just 700 days before the dawn of the 21st century, we are ready to seize this moment in American history to make your generation the best educated, best prepared generation ever in the history of the United States of America. We've got to do that. We've seen almost 100,000 new police put on our streets. We've got to finish that job, and we've seen how it's working because crime in every category is on the way down. Now, he has proposed in his speech last night to put 100,000 new teachers in our schools in this country to bring the classroom sizes down and improve the quality of elementary and secondary education. He's already cut taxes for families and let parents take time off from work to care for a sick child or newborn. Now, he is asking our country to focus on improved access to high-quality child care and after-school care. And we can do it. I'm proud that he is leading our nation and the world to address the problem of global warming and clean up our world's environment for you and for your children. I'm proud that he announced the largest increase ever in history in the National Institutes of Health and the sciences and research and development to benefit the work in this university and elsewhere. So, ladies and gentlemen, we have a choice before us in this nation: to continue this agenda and the investments and fiscal responsibility involved, and to continue building this bright future that the President of the United States has not only sketched out for us, but that he is helping us to reach. A future where you can rise as high and travel as far as your God-given gifts can carry you. So let us move together into that future. Let us dedicate ourselves to working with President Clinton, to fighting alongside him for the 21st century that we all deserve. I am now pleased to introduce the man who has brought us this far and will help us finish our journey to the 21st century. He is the president of the country. He is also my friend. And I want to ask you now, every single one of you, to join me in supporting him and standing by his side. I give to you the President of the United States of America, William Jefferson Clinton. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. Well, thank you. Thank you. I was just sitting here thinking two things. First, when the vice president got really warmed up, I thought to myself, first, it will become slightly obvious to this audience that he and I come from a little further south in the United States. And then I was thinking, when he really got going, I wish I had people walking the aisles passing the plate. You know, it was amazing. I thought he ought to have an invitation or something. Anyway, the second thing I thought in the midst of this wonderful event was that I wished I could take the pep band with me for the next month or two, wherever I go. Thank you. Thank you. I want to say to the Chancellor Aiken and President Stuckel and Mayor McCollum, Mayor Satterthwaite, Congressman Ewing, Senator Durbin, Senator Mosley Braun, Secretary Riley, and Mr. Vice President, I am delighted to be here. I have spent a lot of time in Illinois in the last 7 years, and this state has been very good to me in many ways. The Vice President has been here a lot, and Hillary came and got an honorary degree and was able to speak here. And I have heard from also our families, friends, what a wonderful place this is. I don't know how, with all my roaming across America, I have never lit down here before, but I'm sure glad I got here today. And I thank you for making me feel so welcome. If you heard the State of the Union last night or just listened to the Vice President here today, You know there's a reason we're here, because you represent, both all of you individually and this great institution, what we're trying to build for the future of America. Last night I talked about all the changes that have occurred just in the last few years. We've had one foot in the 21st century for quite some time. The generation living today has lived through more changes in more different areas in a shorter time than virtually any generation in the history of this country. And when the Vice President and I took office, we were committed to trying to make America work again, to try to fix the things that just weren't working for ordinary people, and then to free us up to sort of imagine the future and take the steps that were necessary to get us to the future we want to build. That's really what I talked about last night. How can we strengthen this country for the 21st century? What do we have to do? Now, I don't want to go over everything that was said, and besides that, I can't do as well as the Vice President. He must have gotten 30 more minutes sleep than I did last night. He was terrific. But I want to talk to you about just two or three things that I think we should be thinking about for tomorrow. Let me begin with a bit of history, and your chancellor mentioned it earlier, or the president did. Shortly after Abraham Lincoln was elected president, Congressman Justin Morrill from Vermont asked his colleagues to help him create a system of land-grant colleges. It was in the middle of the Civil War, and frankly, most of them thought he was nuts. You know, people were worried about the survival of the Union. But Abraham Lincoln was always worrying about other things, even in the middle of the Civil War. At night, when I work in the White House, I go to an office that I've had restored to the way it was in the mid-1800s. And I remember that that room was Abraham Lincoln's waiting room during the Civil War. And all during the Civil War, at certain appointed hours, he kept a time apart to meet with ordinary citizens. I mean, if you wanted a job in the post office in Baltimore in 1862, if you came at the appointed day, at the appointed hour, you could walk up to the room that I go into every night and sit there, and Abraham Lincoln would see you, the president would see you, and listen to you tell why you wanted a post office job. And when he was asked why he did this, he said, "I have to remember that people are concerned about other things, and I want this war to be over so all of us can go back to thinking about things like that." So he always thought about what life would be like when the war was over, and he was open to this. In 1862, Morrill's Bill passed, and President Lincoln signed it into law. It became one of the wisest investments our nation ever made, and the University of Illinois here was one of the original land-grant colleges under that Morrill Act. It's played a dramatic role in helping to shape our nation. You heard and you were cheering about all the Nobel Prize winners and all that. The Vice President pointed out that it was here that the transistor was invented. Jack Kilby, class of 47, co-invented the microchip. NCSA, headed by Larry Smart, launched a $1 billion browser industry. Illinois and other land-grant colleges have literally led our way into the information age. And it all stemmed from something somebody did in 1862 that no one could have imagined would one day have led to all you see around. I think Lincoln would have liked the pep band, but he could not have imagined it. So that's what we've been trying to do. And you heard the Vice President say that basically our view was the first thing we had to do is we had to get rid of the deficit, but we had to do it in a way that would enable us to invest in our future. We had to shrink the government, but we had to do it in a way that would allow us to be more active in the areas that were important to our future, that would help to bring us together and widen the circle of opportunity. And the strategy is working. Now, as you look ahead, I'd just like to mention three things today that I think the university can have a major impact on, two directly and one indirectly. First, we should look to the millennium to try to speed the pace of scientific and technological advances in a way that benefit all of us. So I proposed last night a huge increase in medical research, an increase in the National Science Foundation, a doubling of the National Cancer Institute, because I believe we have enormous opportunities there. And you should be a part of that. I think it is highly likely that many of you who will be having children in the next 3 or 4 years will have children that will live into the 22nd century because of the work that will be done in places like the University of Illinois. The second thing that I think we should think about is we should reaffirm our commitment to the exploration of outer space. I talked a little about the International Space Station last night and about Senator John Glenn at 77 years old going back into space. It's so thrilling, and I know all of you are happy about that. But we are learning a lot from our work in space about how our bodies work here on Earth and about how our environment works here on Earth and how it might be better preserved. And so I ask all of you to continue to support the work we're doing there. And finally, I'd ask you to support, as the Vice President said, this next generation internet. I mean, can you really believe that only 5 years ago there were just 50 web pages on the internet? That the internet was the private preserve of physicists 5 years ago, and now most 8-year-olds know more about it than their parents. I mean, that gives you some sense of the speed of change. So we're trying to develop the next generation internet, and Larry Smart is helping us, and if it works, it'll work about 1,000 times faster than the present one does. I don't know how we can absorb any more speed and information, but we have to be able to. We have to maintain public support across party lines and regional lines and age lines and race lines and all kinds of lines for investments in the future. We always have to be trying to shape the future, and we need your help to do that. Now, the second thing that I want to emphasize is that I want all of you to support the proposition that we have to make in the years ahead a college education as universal as a high school education is today. Now, why do I say that? Already, it is perfectly clear from looking at all the census figures that any young person who has at least 2 years of college or more is highly likely to get a job with growing income prospects and high stability, and the prospect of positive change in the future. That a young person with less than 2 years of college is highly likely to be in a job where income increases don't keep up with inflation, subject to changes which may be unstable and not positive. We have to create a network of lifetime learning. We have to, first of all, make our elementary and secondary education as excellent as our higher education is today, so more people will be prepared to go to college. But then we've got to make sure that college is open to all. Now, as the congressman said, 1997 was the best year for education in a generation. And I believe clearly the best year since the GI Bill was passed. If you listen to all the things that were done, and I'll just litanize them for you, I think you can make a compelling case that the doors of college have been open to everybody who will work for it. Now, listen to this. 220,000 new Pell Grant scholarships, and the maximum amount increased. 300,000 new work-study positions. 50,000 AmeriCorps slots for people who do community service work and earn money to go to college. As Senator Mosley Braun said, she co-sponsored the bill to make interest on student loans tax-deductible again. There are IRAs now that you can invest in and then withdraw from tax-free if the money's used for education. The first 2 years of college, virtually all Americans are eligible for a $1,500 tax cut to pay for tuition in the first 2 years of college, the HOPE scholarship, and then another tax credit for the third and fourth years of college for graduate school and for further job training, a lifetime learning credit. Now, this is an amazing thing. But what I want to say to you is, all of you who are here, I came here to ask you, as a great university, in whatever service groups you're in whatever family or neighborhood or church networks you have, you need to get this message out to people who are coming on behind you. We need every child in this country to know that if he or she works hard and learns what they're supposed to learn, they can all go to college now, and we need them there for our future in the 21st century. Now, last thing I want to ask your help on in the coming year, because we're going to have a big dialogue about it, is something that all of you students probably never think about, and that is Social Security in your retirement. I don't know about you, but when I was your age, I never thought about it. I thought I would live forever, always young. What Senator Mosley Braun said is true. The older you get, the faster time goes. I never will forget, once a few years ago, I saw a man who was 76 years old at an airport meeting his brother, getting ready to go to his sister's funeral. And I said, "What are you thinking about?" He said, "Oh, I'm thinking about when we were 5 years old, how we used to play together." He said, "You know, Bill, it doesn't take long to live a life." I say that to say that even the young must care for the future. Even the young must think about their obligations to generations yet unborn. That America must work as a seamless web of community, always doing what is best for today and tomorrow. Now, what's that got to do with Social Security? Well, there are polls that say that young people in their 20s think it's more likely that they will see UFOs than that they will ever collect Social Security. And And all of you know that the Social Security system is supposed to be in trouble. Now, what does that mean? It is not in trouble today. Nobody today has got any problems drawing their money. In fact, today we collect more money in Social Security taxes every year, quite a bit more than we pay out. The problem is that when the baby boomers retire, starting with me, I'm the oldest of the baby boomers, people my age and down about 18 years younger, we are the largest group of Americans that have ever lived, except the group that started first grade last year, second grade. Then we've now got we now are third grade, whatever it is, something in grade school, because we've got more children in schools now, public schools, than we had during the baby boom generation for the first time. But we're going to have 18, 20, 25 years where there'll be a huge number of people on Social Security in their retirement years compared to the people who are paying in. That is the issue. Now, the question is, what is the best way to prepare for the retirement of the baby boomers in ways that do not either rob those people who need it of their secure retirement or impose intolerable burdens on our children, who in turn will be burdened in raising our grandchildren? I don't know anybody in my generation who believes that we ought to just take it out on you and put our feet up when we turn 65 and turn away from the obligations we have to contribute to the further growth and vitality of people who are younger than we are. So the question is, what is the fairest way to change this? What's best for people who are on Social Security now? What's best for the baby boomers? What's best for young people in their 20s and 30s just starting to pay into the system? What's best for the kids that are in high school now who haven't even started? We're going to spend a year having forums all across the country, completely nonpartisan, trying to bring people in and debate it. And then about a year from now, I'm going to convene the leaders of Congress, and we're going to try to craft historic bipartisan legislation to reform Social Security, to save it for the 21st century, to make sure it's there, not just for the baby boomers, but for everybody in this audience and all your children too, so we'll have a system that works so that people who work hard and do their part will know they'll have elemental retirement security and that we can do it without bankrupting the country. I think we can do it. I know we can do it, but it's going to take your good faith involvement, people of all ages. And since what we do may affect how you proceed throughout your entire work life, we've got to have people involved in their 20s, in their 30s. The young people of this country have got to be involved in this debate. It will affect you as much as anybody else. But if we do it, it'll be just sort of like balancing the budget. You know how people said, oh, you'll never get that budget balanced, and you never do that. You know, that's just something politicians talk about. It is a huge thing to do. Why? We spend less money on debt. We invest more money in our future. We have a stronger economy. The same thing will be true of Social Security. Once we make the adjustments necessary to fix it, the increase in confidence, the increase in savings, the increase in belief in the future of this country as we go forward together will be absolutely astonishing. And we need you to be a part of it. Last thing I want to ask you about. The Vice President touched this briefly, and he knows more about it than I do. But we need young people in this country, particularly young people in our university system, to convince the rest of America that we must and we can address the challenge of climate change and global warming. Now, I can tell you, I have been working on the economics of energy efficiency for over 20 years now in various guises. I am convinced that the technology is out there right now to do what we need to do our part to reduce greenhouse gas emissions in factories, in power generation systems, in homes and office buildings, and we're getting very, very close in automobiles. We can get there, but listen, this is your future. This is your life. This is the world your children and your grandchildren will have to live in the 21st century. This is crazy for us not to do this. We do not have to take the economy down. We will lift the economy up, and you have to take the lead in helping us to meet this challenge. Now, so, scientific research, universal access to university education, reforming Social Security for the 21st century, dealing with the challenge of climate change. Those are just four of the things that are out there. Keep your eyes on the future. Believe in this country. Believe in yourselves. Reach out across the lines that divide us. Do not ever let people who are divisive or pessimistic convince you that there is anything this country can't do. I can look at you and tell you that this country can do anything we put our mind to. Thank you, and God bless you. Thank you.